Casino. Nothing else comes close.
Here's Doan on the right side. One man ahead of him, Trailer Valeno, plays it to the far circle. Back across, scores! What a feed across! And it's Matias Samuelson that gets Buffalo on the board first. And a 1-0 lead again at the Bell Center in Montreal with 13:28 to go in the opening period. Going to drop it back. Here's Thompson. Going to fire it in. Got to win this battle along the wall. And that puck.
It's a goal.
It's a goal. It went in the back of the net. Dobish. It hits the back of Dobish on the shoot-in. And the Sabres have tied the game here. Comes off the glass.
Yeah, right with the Zamboni entrances. And it hit that glass and came back out and hit Dobish in the right leg and then into the net. Initially, it looked like it fell on the side of the net, but it's not. It's in the net.
Trying to dangle to an open space. Thompson turns. Bottom of the circle. Here's a play in front. Backhand scores. Great feed for Benson in front. And Zach Benson gets the goal to put the Buffalo Sabres on top 3-2 on the power play.
Sabres win and send this series back to Buffalo all even at 2. The challenge for Marty today, in a paragraph as opposed to a full page, please put into context what just happened last night.
The challenge is way more for you to keep me on the road and not taking the back roads.
I got you, buddy.
Yes. What happened last night? Well, a lot. I mean, we can split that games into three different stories. The start, the challenge, then the second period, the end, you know, the bad bounce, the good bounce for the Sabres.
Exactly.
There's so many things you can look at. I will start from the beginning. This was a really good start of the game for the Sabres. And yes. Look, I didn't think game three was good at all, and they got the first goal in game three, but really gave everything Montreal what they wanted. Defensively, the Sabres weren't playing well in game two and three, and really the third period of game one. So they went back to let's really have a good start, and then let's, you know, protect the middle, block shots. Like, Montreal had a ton of good looks, but the block shots were huge. 27 block shots at the end of the night. So you focus on the defense, right? You focus on defending, and that's what got you to win. Montreal can say we played well and we liked our game, and I'm sure they do. But at the end of the day, you, as the Sabres, got the win because you defended first, and that was the priority in this game.
Right, but just like the previous game, all the good things you just said about the start went for naught, and you were facing even more adversity as far as handling your own emotions because of everything that unfolded. Maybe, just for old time's sake, I should have started the show with, what is goaltender interference?
Under review. Here it is. So the biggest thing for me on that play is the fact that, you know, Dobesh makes a save on Quinn. They go to commercial. I mean, where was the review? Like, it's a 3-minute commercial. Like,
right.
They could have reviewed it then. Then they come back and they're like, oh, wait a second. That puck may have been over the line. And it was over the line. And we saw the replay. The puck was flat in the back of Dobesh's glove. And the glove and the pocket was over the line. We can actually see the puck in the glove over the line. So the right call was made, but it was a pretty lengthy review. Mm-hmm. I think they were waiting for a couple of clips and they ended up seeing the puck where they wanted to see. So they say it's a good goal. Marty St. Louis challenges it. It's a really good challenge. And Marty St. Louis after the game said, look, either way, we win the challenge, we save a goal, we lose the challenge, we have an opportunity to go on the penalty kill and maybe get some momentum because their start was not good. Mm-hmm. Now, that's the coach's view of it after they've won the challenge, right? So he's looking at glass half full.
But you and I were both wrong. We both thought it would be a goal.
I understand the call that was made by the league, by the letter of the law. Because even though you're making an attempt at scoring, like Consta Helenius made an attempt at scoring right there, there is contact with the goalie. So if you just look at that and you say there's contact with the goalie in the crease, no goal. The issue with me is you have to look at the whole picture. Mm-hmm. And there is a little contact. Lindy Ruff after the game said, we've talked about it before. We've talked to the supervisor and the league about it. Dobesh has his stick out all the time. He's mm-hmm. trying to initiate contact. And when Helenius came through, his stick is way out. Like, it's not affecting his position. Mm-hmm. He's the one. And Caden Gooley actually comes in and hammers his goalie after mm-hmm. the fact. So I'm like, okay, there is contact by Helenius, but the goalie contact on his own goalie to me is more significant. And don't tell me Dobesh couldn't play his position. He actually made the save. He just made it 2 inches below the goal line, right? So to me, that's where I thought this was going to be a good goal. I understand why the decision was made when you look at the rule book, but sometimes you got to be a little bit smarter than just reading the words on that page and then deciding. You got to read the whole play, and the whole play was more Caden Gooley, boom, into his goalie that affected the positioning.
Yeah, I agree, and I give them credit for being smarter than just reading stuff that's in their rule book.
That's why.
Well, no, I'm not going to disparage the group that is always in these high pressure situations. I'm saying is you and I have seen enough to usually come to conclusions that match what ends up happening on the ice. It's not to say we're not ever wrong, but there was a unique factor that you just identified, and that was the interference from his own defenseman in Gooley. If that part of it didn't happen, I don't think there would have been perceived interference based on the Helenu's drive-by. I really don't. And
well, I look at it, Duffer. What if Gooley hammers Dobesh in the back of the net?
Well, right.
And Quinn has an open end and scores. Do they say, yeah, but Helenu's made contact before Gooley hammered his goalie, and we're going to call it no goal? No, they would have said, it's his own player. That's the same thing right there.
Correct. And not only that, you mentioned the initiation, essentially, by Dobesh of the contact. It's his stick. If it was the other way around and Consta was skating through and was jabbing with his stick, I would fully understand it.
Yes.
But this was the other way around. So it really was an awful lot to manage emotionally. And the Sabres...
It was a really... I don't ever want to criticize. You mentioned the Situation Room in Toronto, the NHL office. They do a great job. They're consistent all year, as much as they can. Now, this was not the best officiating game. I think they really... decided to call a lot of ticky-tacky, whatever. Did it balance out in the wash? Yes. Could Connor Timmins have gotten a high stick on Evans? Yes. Could there have been other things? Yes. But I felt like the start of the game, they were losing control a little bit.
Well, Darren Dreger, our hockey insider from TSN, is with us earlier this week, and he was, of course, covering last night's game as well. Darren, how about, since we're on the topic, and we'll get into many more, how about your thoughts on that goaltender interference that negated a goal for the Sabres?
Yeah, you know, I guess what I'd like to know is there or are there additional camera angles that we didn't have access to? And that's not unusual, right? You know, the Situation Room will use all the broadcast cameras that they have and all of the in-arena cameras that they have. But that doesn't necessarily mean that we as fans or media are seeing every view that they have. I mean, it looked to me like the puck was in the glove, in the mesh, and had crossed the line. But based on the angles that we saw in Canada, can you definitively see the outline of the puck in the glove across the line? And I'm not so sure about that. But, you know, the Situation Room said, yeah, no, that's a good goal. But you could smell what was coming next, right? And... you know, the double review isn't something that happens a ton, but it does happen. And when there's a playoff game potentially on the line, they're going to take as long as they need to work through that process. Now, the goal review went longer than the goalie interference, but the goalie interference allowed the Montreal Canadiens video coaches extra time to take a look and convince themselves that they believe that there was goaltender interference. So... the whole thing is confusing to me, but I think that Buffalo had a bigger case for the goalie interference than the justification of just conclusively knowing that puck had fully crossed the line inside the glove.
Mm-hmm. What was the first thing you guys talked about in the hot zone after the game yesterday with Frankie and Carlo and the panel? Just because, I mean, obviously... on our side was the Sabres and defending and blocking shots. And you know, the Montreal went 4-7 on the power play. And it was like the double minor at the end of the second and early in the third where Buffalo only allowed 2 shots on goal. But, you know, on the other side, when you're covering the Canadians more in that situation, what was the hot zone first topic?
Yeah, well, you know, the bigger picture was the response from the Buffalo Sabres. And, you know, so they cleaned up a number of things. They certainly looked better prepared for what the Montreal Canadiens were going to throw at them in Game 4. And, you know, we heard from Lindy Ruff after the game talk about what that first 8-9 minutes and how that's maybe as well as they played all postseason or in a long, long time. And I think you got the feel. You got the tone of that for sure. But there were some weird elements to this game. We've already talked about the double review, the power play goal that was scored by Tage Thompson. I mean, just bizarre, right? Even though, I mean, Frankie Corrado sits on the panel as part of our hot zone. He does a lot of Montreal Canadiens games. And he referenced seeing that more than a couple of times during regular season play. That spot, you know, on the door or the stanchion, the glass, whatever. And Marty Saint-Louis, I think in French, talked about how Dobish got beat earlier in the year on something very, very similar. So anyway, I like the overall pushback by the Sabres. I did not expect, because Montreal had a real nice game in Game 3, that that was going to flip the switch in the series. We knew that Buffalo had more to give, but they didn't clean everything up. Again, one of the post-game takeaways from Lindy after Game 3 was, well, we got to be more disciplined. And I came into the segment, and I heard you guys talking about the officiating, and I get it. But shouldn't it be human nature, when you see how tight they're calling things, to be mindful of that as a player? Yeah. And a high stick is a high stick is a high stick, you know? So the stuff that would anger me as a coach would be the stuff that you can instantly eliminate. And stick penalties are a big part of that. So, you know, they're lucky, in my opinion. I thought Buffalo was the better team, but the fact that Montreal won 1-for-7 on the power play, I mean, talk about poking the bear. You don't want to do that in now what is a best of three.
Yeah, and obviously it takes an awful lot of players to accomplish killing off 6 out of the 7, and we talk every day about the Sabres, so I'd be curious more from yours and the panel's standpoint, like which Sabres are now garnering more attention from you and the panel north of the border?
I mean, that's a good question. The lineup change on defense was interesting. I mean, you know, not a, a headline grabber, if you will. You know, I think that most of us are Luke Shen fans, given that we know the character and the compete level of Luke Shen and the experience that he has. But you knew that in the bigger picture, he'd be used somewhat sparingly. Carlo Koliakvo was not in favor of the goaltender change going into the game. And then post-game, he's talking about how good UPL was. So I guess now he's in favor of the fact that they've got this really solid 1-2 punch. And guys, for me, you know, you learn to love really good individual postseason stories, right? And I think of the Carolina Hurricanes, and, you know, there's more than one good story in Carolina. I mean, I'm thinking of the Linus Stankoven and Jackson Blake and Taylor Hall and how good they've been to this point. And I am a fan of how Zach Benson plays the game and just how the kid just seems to be in the right place at the right time. And, you know, the goal he scored last night, you know, that's just elevating your level of IQ and being in tune with what is happening. You know, to accept that pass off the skate, quickly get it to the back end, then flip it up and over Dobish, that's a high skill play. It's a high school, skill play. And he's been that constant. But it's how well-rounded his game is. It's not just goals like this. And we've seen him produce offensively to this point of the postseason. He just brings a little bit of everything, doesn't he? He's fully engaged. He drags his line mates and the team into the battle. He's constantly chirping and is just enjoying the moment. So, I mean, I'm a member of his fan club. I know Habs fans aren't going to like that, but I am. I'm a big believer. And Western Canadian.
Yes. Yeah, good old Chili, Chiliwack, BC, I believe. I mean, just a dog, and he calls everybody dogs. Talks about Luke and him, he says he was a dog. You know, it was a dog yesterday, and it was his first ever playoff game with Konstas Helenius, and he was he was good, and the offense was there, and the jump was there. And on that goal, that was Jack Quinn goal, no goal reviews.
Yeah.
Like, He took a cross check from Harbor Jack High on the back post.
Brutal.
Like his head disappeared, but he went back at it. Like, how great was that?
Look at this.
Oh. Like, I don't have the credit icon as to where that feed is coming from. Was that an ESPN feed? Or was
yeah,
that
I believe so. Canadian? That was ESPN for us.
So, again, not being critical, but it was Cole Yakovo who spotted it. But we only had the reverse behind the net look. So you could see his head snap forward after that cross check. But we didn't get a full sense of how vicious it was until seeing it on the American feed after the fact. I go back to the post-game comments. More often than not, you don't learn a whole lot from the coaches because they're just not going to take you inside that world. Lindy is a little bit different because he's been there and he's done that, right? So to hear him when asked specifically about him playing and what he thought his game was, and for him to say, I thought he was terrific, start to finish, just a complete all-around game. Well, I think that's an accurate and a fair assessment and a complimentary one. But the fact that that kid survived that cross check also gives you a sense of a level of physical toughness in his game as well.
Dregs, I know you're really good friends with Ray Ferraro, and I love Ray. And, you know, he was doing the game last night, and I thought he was going to take to social media and start calling everybody chum because, you know, the fans in Buffalo felt like he was a little pro-Canadians yesterday. So could you talk to Ray about his they're not doing game five, that's TNT, but game six and a potential game seven. He'd be probably on the call with ESPN because those will be big games. So, you know, like, we might need you to talk to Ray and then, you know, just smooth things up a little bit.
Sorry, can't. I haven't had this conversation directly with Ray, but I think there's a heightened level of sensitivity to social media right now.
Oh, yes.
And Ray is one of those personalities. We all know him well. See, I get lots of hate, you know, social media directed at me too. I choose not to read it. I don't engage with it, or seldom will I engage with it. I don't think Ray is wired that way. I think he reads it. I think that he you know, and yeah, he'll engage every once in a while. But somebody told me last night that he was getting it from Buffalo fans, but he was also getting it from Bruins fans because I guess they feel that he's also somewhat pro-Hab. So I'll bring it up, but only bring it up, Marty, on your behalf. Not that I'm going to advise him on what to do.
Don't mention me.
How's your internet doctor, buddy?
Oh, boy. I think there was a mutual agreement. We just decided to mute each other.
I love it.
Yeah, because I don't mind, again, people want to comment or reply. It's my choice whether or not I want to engage.
Yes.
But when you at somebody, you're dragging them into a conversation or topic that you don't necessarily want to play a part of. And that's what this dude was doing, which was pissing me off.
Just let the lesson always be that mute is one of the most powerful four-letter words at our disposal in the world we live in today.
Yes.
Mute,
civilized.
Mute, yes.
Yeah, it's a civilized way of just tuning people up.
Okay, I have troubles with a call or a potential result of a call in another game last night.
Yeah.
And I, of course, have stated 1,612 times in my career that I'm a member of the Braden McNabb fan club.
Same.
Don't understand how he is facing a hearing for this hit on Ryan Poehling last night that, yes, was interference, but it was, in my opinion, just a bad result to a pretty normal hit from a big defenseman.
I don't disagree with that. And, you know, I have not been in communication with anyone directly involved with the Department of Player Safety, and normally you do get a sense of what their initial view was. And again, to remind people of their process, there's several eyes that are put on a play. Everybody offers an opinion, but it comes down to George Parros deciding whether it elevates. And for it to elevate to a hearing, which normally ends in a form of suspension, in the playoffs, well, then some pretty serious lines have been crossed to get to that point. But I'm with you, Duffer. You know, again, I like the idea of being able to look at major penalties. In this case, you know, it was a major penalty. You uphold the major penalty, and I thought everybody would move on. So I was surprised when the hearing alert came from the account of the Department of Player Safety. I would not have predicted last night that that was potentially going to end into a suspension, just based on some of the other things that have ended up in fines or nothing, based on right. what we've seen towards the midpoint of this postseason.
Yeah, and we also got that Charlie McAvoy result yes. after the hearing. That was a six-gamer. That was basically the minimum that they could do because yeah. it was an in-person hearing, so it was six or more. Were you surprised that it was even six? Look, I mean, it's a bad whack, right? It's a two-hander, and he comes down. There was no injuries. There was no, like, shoulder or head issues. Really, to be honest with you, I could have gone with three, four, whatever. They gave him six. Like, I don't know. How did you see that Charlie McAvoy situation?
Well, I was surprised when they invited him into the in-person yes. because I agree. I didn't think that it was going to get into that 3-4-5 area. I didn't. Mm-hmm. I didn't see that. And people could say, well, the only reason it didn't hurt Benson is because he had protection there. Okay, but, I mean, you can't play the what-if game. I mean, it didn't, he had a guard on and it protected him from an injury. I think the optics played a role in this. Yes. But, again, you always have to rewind. And it's not like Benson was without blame in that whole process, right? And if you talk to Bruins fans, they're still outraged that there wasn't something done on what their perception is of a slew foot.
Yeah.
Right? So there was a lot going on around that play. Now, if we are willing to play the what-if, if you're giving Charlie McAvoy six regular season games for that, just imagine if that had broken his wrist.
Right.
Well, I mean, are we talking double digits?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I mean, maybe. But I think it has as much to do with not just the execution, but the deliberate optics of it, where you're just in a premeditated fashion identifying what it is you're going to do mm-hmm. and then viciously executing. So that's probably what earned the six games.
I'm not intentionally on a Vegas train right now, but the topic continues here because I've been asking you specifically as our insider for well over a year now, what is Vegas going to do as far as dollar figures and term with Pavel Dorofeev? Because many would look at next year's cap projection already and feel like Vegas has some challenges. And once again, their leading goal scorer, regular season and playoff, is now positioned, my opinion, to jump from 1.8 a year to at least nine in today's NHL. Woo.
Yeah. Well, I believe they'll get him signed. I have no reason to believe otherwise. I mean, as you say, the proof is in the pudding. I mean, he's just an integral part of the Vegas Golden Knights and the level of success. You know, we're wondering about Rasmus Anderson, you know, the defenseman they acquired from Calgary. You know, what's going to become of him? You know, can you extend both those guys at the numbers that have probably been discussed with the Anderson camp prior to so, look, it's fair, Duffer, to question all of that. But Kelly McCrimmon and George McPhee have proven time and time and time again, they find a way to wiggle through. They just find a way. And whether it's an injury that we're unaware of that is going to, you know, sideline a core guy for an extended period of time or a trade, or whatever, I do appreciate their style of management. It's not like they just wake up and go, okay, well, today's the day we have to address this.
Right.
They are playing chess, and there's several moves ahead. Mm-hmm. So we're not shedding any light on the situation by talking about it. I'm sure that Callum McCrimmon has a sharpened pencil, and he knows fairly certainly what he's going to do.
Big news north of the border in Toronto. Obviously, Chaika and Sundin, the new hockey department, firing Craig Berube and now it's coaching search. So, you know, how did that happen?
Yeah, a bit surprising, not shocking. You know, again, when a new management group is brought in, you know, that's one of the bullets in the chamber, you know, is that, okay, if you're not aligned with a coach, Normally, though, GMs want to give that coach some time. You know, let's make sure that we don't mesh, right? So my understanding is that Chaika and Berube and Matt Sundin met for pushing 5 hours on Saturday in Toronto. And they talked about everything. You know, the direction moving forward, individually each player and their fit as Berube saw it at that time. And I think that there was a positive feel to come out of that meeting. But Chaika would have had conversations with the players. He hasn't met yet with his captain, Austin Matthews. That'll happen sooner than later. So maybe the feedback from some of the players wasn't as positive as that meeting went. But, look, I mean, it kind of makes sense. You know, we're dealing with a disadvantage here, not knowing. And I think John Chaika coming up in minutes is going to say that his search is going to be wide open. So you've got Bruce Cassidy attached now, reportedly to mm-hmm. Edmonton, reportedly to the Los Angeles Kings. I mean, if you're firing one decorated head coach in Berube, I guess you'd consider another one in Bruce Cassidy. But just knowing how creative John Chaika isn't thinking outside the box, I think there's going to be some curious coaching names as he goes through what is expected to be a pretty lengthy process.
Darren, you got to fly. Thank you so much, as always, for the insight today.
Okay, guys, enjoy the playoffs.
Darren Dreger, hockey insider from TSN. We've got our pre- and post-game shows every single night as this Sabre postseason continues. We're on the air on MSG and on the Sabres app and on all the Sabres social half an hour before every game. So that's 6:30 tomorrow. And we have comprehensive post-game coverage as well right here on MSG. We're back with more Sabres Live after this.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
What a day, what a day, what a spring it has been, and it continues tomorrow night with Game 5 at home against Montreal, and you can buy these tickets right now. I'm talking about the 50-50 raffle presented by Northtown Automotive, guaranteed jackpot of $100,000. Scan the QR code on the screen on MSG right now. You can get the tickets right now. You don't have to be in the building tomorrow. As long as you're in New York State, you can get them right now. Or go to sabres.com/5050 to do it that way. It's going to be an incredible atmosphere here. Make yourself feel a part of it and help those funds get redistributed in our community. Welcome back on Sabres Live.
Even if you're like, let's say you're in Southern Ontario, but you have business in Buffalo today or tomorrow, then get your tickets when you're in New York State. Or if you're in Pennsylvania, you're driving through New York State, get your tickets then. Like, you don't have to be in New York State during the game, just when you buy the tickets.
Okay, we have so many things still to discuss from last night. Yes, and we want to make sure that you know that we're paying attention to what you say to us at yes. Sabres Live. We try to engage as much as possible, but sometimes some people deserve a little bit of extra acknowledgement. And when we had a poll like we did yesterday, and more people than not were on the wrong side of positivity,
yes.
Let's give it up for Oswald.
The temperature for the Sabres for the Outlook, the series yesterday, was the poll, and full panic mode ended up winning at a 33%. And Oswald said, Sabres are going to win today. Never been more confident going into this one. I'll tell you this, Oswald. Maybe you had the speech of a lifetime in the locker room before the game that everybody's going to remember, at least for the rest of this series. But we gave you kind of the Oswald is very confident yesterday, and it was the correct answer, everybody. So be more like Oswald.
And I love the fact that Darren threw Carlo under the bus with the talk of goaltending. And I know this, Carlo Koliakovo was not alone. Many from the outside that haven't paid enough attention to the Sabres this year. And I'm not saying Carlo didn't, but what I'm saying in general terms, most people instinctively don't like goaltender rotations. They don't like change when somebody isn't at fault. The fact of the matter is, Ruff's decision to go with Luukkonen was borne out through success ever since the beginning of December. And Luukkonen's road numbers have been outstanding. And it showed again last night. Luukkonen's performance against Montreal was everything you could have hoped. Was it perfect? No. But was it excellent? Yes. Especially when you consider more than 11 minutes on the penalty kill. And Marty, the Sabres are the only team in the Stanley Cup playoffs this year that have at least two wins from two different goalies.
Yeah, so I was in full panic mode after the first period, and Luukkonen acknowledged, he said, I didn't like that Caulfield goal, and I was like, it's a bad goal to give up at the end of the first period, just 5-0, paddle down, you know, the whole thing. But the two saves that he made on Cole Caulfield at the start of the second period, a couple of one-timers, and that is playing to Luukkonen's strength, the ability to move laterally, to be explosive, to have the splits, to have the athleticism. He made those two saves, and all of a sudden, the body language changed. Like, the glove was in front catching pucks. Their rebounds were covered. His positioning was strong. I did not love the first, but again, like, there's a moment in games sometimes where you have to reset. And I think that the first intermission, Luukkonen used it to reset, was excellent in the second, excellent in the third. And so, to me, he was a big part of that success. Yes, we talked about Benson, Hellenius, Samuelson, Timmins on the PK. We can talk about Doan and everything. But Luukkonen was a big reason for that win last night, and played with a little bit more swagger than we've seen in the first two games against Boston.
It's so funny, though. You mentioned the reset, and maybe it kind of happened. It certainly happened for him because his game was excellent beyond the first period. But when you look at the team and the penalty parade that started in the final minute of the first period with Tage Thompson, and a penalty that ultimately hurt them because of the goal that got past Luukkonen from Caulfield, and then in the second, Byram for high-sticking, and then Dahlin for interference, and then another double minor high-sticking for Byram. This is why, Marty, if you didn't notice last night in our postgame, or even how we started the show today, these instances, these penalties, these avoidable situations are why I'm kind of still struggling to process everything that we saw last night and imagine how it can look for Buffalo going into Game 5 tomorrow.
So there's two ways to look at it. Were they calls? Yeah, potentially their calls. Were they soft? You know, softer than the nicest, you know, toilet paper you can get at the grocery store. Yeah, there were some soft calls. And Lindy Ruff acknowledged it today. You know, the Sabres stayed overnight, flying back today. But he talked to the media and he said, look, they went down easy. And look, Peyton Krebs drew the ultimate penalty that led to the Benson goal by going down a little easy. Like, there was definitely an arm that was reaching, right, to try to hold him back. But I think that Peyton Krebs felt like, hey, if Montreal can play that game, I can play that game too. And he drew a penalty that was a soft call, but it worked for the Sabres and they capitalized. So was the call on Dahlin while they were on the power play soft, and did Gouley, like, embellished? Absolutely. Did Gouley embellish the cross check on that Thompson gave him a little push? Yes. And you know what? The correct thing for me as a referee would have been to go to Thompson and say, I'm going to give you a pass. Like, he went down easy, but don't do it again. Like, that's unnecessary. And I think the word of Lindy Ruff after the game was, these were unnecessary penalties that we took. We have to be more disciplined. They were soft calls, but two things could be right at the same time.
Right, but it's multiple games in a row because we showed you the graphic in our pregame yesterday going into Game 4, all of the offensive zone penalties. And the reason we built the graphic is because that was the talking point from the coach after Game 3. So this is why I'm challenged to look at how they're going to be able to handle it. I know they can't. I know they can't handle it. They're the best team in the NHL since December 9th. So, yes, I know they can handle this. But sometimes habits in short moments are hard to break. So that's what I'm asking you, is how do they snap out of this kind of habit, bad habit, over the last couple of games?
So when you lose a game, you have a lot to correct and a lot to talk about. And, yes, you're going to talk about the penalties. But I always feel like puck management, undisciplined stuff, whatever, is easier to address after a win.
Okay.
Because you can really harp on it and say, hey, big win, we won it, and do the John Tortorella, give the compliment and come down with the hammer right after. Great effort, 27 block shots, way to go, Timmer, way to go, Sammy, way to go, McLeod up front, and Greenway, and you guys, everything that you did on the penalty kill. But you guys got to get your head on straight, and you come down after. It's easier after a win.
Okay, you started the show, and I'd love to revisit it right now. Can we look at Matias Samuelsson, his goal, and the fact that Buffalo has now matched the most prolific goal-scoring playoff run by a defense corps that they have had in their franchise history? They have 9 goals so far from the blue line, 4 from Byram, 3 from Samuelsson, 2 from Dahlin. That's 9 in total. That matches the 83 and 99 squads. And most importantly, it was part of a victory. But this is what for you? Because I don't know if there's a single topic that we've stressed more consistently throughout the year season than offense from the defense.
Yeah, and it was the way that the offense from the defense, you know, you can shoot the puck from the blue line, you can have the Al MacInnis one-timer and whatever, but that's not the way the Sabres have scored this year. It has been joining the rush, adding a layer to their attack, and then Matias Samuelsson comes in, sneaks out in the back door, and that was another thing I talked about in the pregame, about you got to make Dobesh go laterally. When Norris has that puck and he sees Benson driving the net, he sees Samuelsson and he's like, I'm not taking that shot. We have to go laterally, and Samuelsson there, right? That is so important, and that is going to need to continue. I thought, look, you know, there was moments in the Boston series and early in this Montreal series where I felt like Samuelsson was just a little behind in reaction time, just maybe a half a step, right? And he can overcome a lot of those because of his length and because of his size. This was probably Samuelsson's best game in the playoffs yet in the first two rounds. The impact defensively, but he had the jump. He had the, and you know what? Like, got to give him credit to be able to start that scoring, jumping in on the rush and putting that one in the back of the net.
And surviving with Timmins a ridiculous amount of minutes in shorthanded time on ice.
Like
both of them
minutes.
North of 7 minutes, and that is just somewhere you do not want to be at any point in the season, let alone here in the month of May.
He used 3 defensemen mostly on the penalty kill.
Well, and even Shen, Timmins, for his limited minutes, he played almost 3 shorthanded minutes. That's something out of playing only 7 minutes in the game.
Yeah, Owen Power played 5, so you have Samuelsson and Timmins over 7, Power 5. Shen around 2. But so you use like basically 3, and Shen was spotted in there. But the one thing too is you were able to, the double minor Byram at the end of the second period, you basically finished the second, went into the intermission, and then started the third. So you can use the same guys, which Montreal used their top power play guys for over 3.5 minutes of that, and you only gave up 2 shots on that power play.
Okay, take us into Game 5 tomorrow, whether it's the continuation of Doan's streak. He's riding a 5-gamer right now, which is, you know, tied for the longest assist streak, but there's only 4 guys in the playoffs right now that have had a longer point streak than Doan's current 5-gamer, and he had 2 assists last night. Whether your thought process starts with Doan or somewhere else, take us into tomorrow and Game 5.
Well, I felt like Doan and Benson had been the most consistent, best probably players as winger, as a duo. And Norris joined them yesterday, played a really good game.
But of course he doesn't tell us that.
That's no, but the they thing. Were like, against Suzuki all night.
And right, but you still don't want a night where you're 2-4 and 14 against like Norris was, right?
No, and you're right. I just feel like they were able to not just defend, but try to give some offense as well, which is what you got to do against Suzuki. And maybe this was the first time in the series that Norris went pretty much head-to-head with Suzuki. So I think they'll even get better. I felt Alex Tuck played his best game of this series. And after game 2 and 3, he was very critical of himself. I need to be better on the back check. I need to help Tage Thompson more. But there was a couple of chances early in the game where Alex Tuck had a good chance in the slot. Then he hit the crossbar on the side. Like, there was some great Alex Tuck moment in this game. That was good to see. So was the game perfect? No, in no way was that game perfect. Montreal probably feels like they should have deserved a better fate in the game. This was the first close game, really, of the series. Game 1, Buffalo had a 4-1 lead. Game 2 and 3, felt like Montreal ran away with it. This was a close game, and the Sabres were able to close out a close game. So I'm sorry, I'm going to stress the heck out of everybody, but I think we got to expect more of what we saw in Game 4 and Game 5 here tomorrow.
Well, it's interesting just from how you laid it out, how the series has progressed to the tightest game yet last night. But another theme of ours is the road team. Last night it was 1-1. Vegas was able to win at home. Buffalo won on the road. So we're 31 up, 31 down, depending on which side of the fence you're on, pro home, pro road. It's been more difficult for Buffalo on home ice. Mm-hmm. It has been more successful for Montreal, like Buffalo, on the road so far in these playoffs. And you just mentioned a matchup, which is why this actually can matter. What can be the biggest key for Buffalo to actually enjoy, utilize home ice tomorrow?
The start's going to be big, like it was in game 3 and 4, but to sustain that energy, like I didn't like the start in game 2, obviously, that's not, but game 1 was great.
Yes.
So the start is huge, right? And you let it slip in game 3. It was your own doing of how you score right away. Tage scores, and then you kind of just give it back to Montreal. You didn't defend. So that is huge. You know me, like I look at all kinds of things, mm-hmm. and I've been seeing some chatter on social media that the biggest, most important key to tomorrow's game is Sabretooth coming down from the rafters. 2-0 at home this year when Sabretooth comes down from the rafters. And it may be as crazy as just getting that energy right from the get-go. But if that was me, that's a key to tomorrow's game.
That's why he's the best in the business, folks. And make sure that you're with us, not just for tomorrow, but as this series continues, because it will. After game 5 here tomorrow night, it's going back to Montreal for game 6. And we have a watch party here at KeyBank Center. It's presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. You can expect giveaways, discounted concessions, and more. What better place to catch game 6 than right here at KeyBank Center on the video board? Tickets are just $5 with all proceeds benefiting the Sabres Foundation. Visit Sabres.com/playoffs to learn more.
Get back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
All right, don't miss your chance to own a 25-26 game-worn jersey. You can bid on the black and red ones worn this season by your favorite players. All proceeds benefit the Sabres Foundation. Auction is open now through May 17th at 9 p.m., so place your bids today at sabres.com/auction. Love this when it happens with birthdays, when your age lines up with your jersey number. 41 for 41. How about happy birthday, Yaro Halak?
And Steve Ott have gone to the St. Louis Blues. In exchange, Yaro Halak, who has become an unrestricted free agent at the end of the season, is going back to the Buffalo Sabres.
I will remember you. Will you remember me?
May reported that Yaroslav Halak has been traded by Buffalo to the Washington Capitals, so the Capitals get Yaroslav Halak.
Don't let your love weep not for memory.
I'd like to thank Connor Gorman, we believe, for creating that video on the internet
years
for
ago.
Number 41, Yaro Halak, who did dress for one game for the Sabres. It was in Dallas.
Yeah,
the game was performed by Jonas Enroth. Halak did wear 41 while he sat on the bench, never did appear for Buffalo.
You know, words matter, Duffer. The song says, I will remember you. Mm-hmm. Will you remember me? I wonder if Yaro Halak remembers his time in Buffalo, because we sure do. The short time he's been here.
Can we celebrate something else a little bit more spectacular in Sabres history on this date?
Goodman broke it up. Spezza keeping it in there. Now it's stolen away and cleared out to center ice to Pominville. Pominville into Ottawa territory. Pominville goes around Alfredson, cuts in, but scores! Jason Pominville, shorthanded. Oh, no! Scary good, and they are going to either Carolina or New Jersey. The Buffalo Sabres knock off the Senators in overtime.
That's why we had reunion night this year. 20 years ago, the 05-06 team, you ended up on your butt in that celebration.
Yeah, I ended up falling on my rear end as I jumped onto the pile, and ended up that the ice was a lot lower, so when I came back, I ended up backwards. Jay McKee out of the penalty box. First went to celebrate with Palmer. Derek Roy and Jason Pominville, two young kids, killing penalties in overtime. Like, that was a very gutsy move by Lindy Ruff. It paid off. And then when we returned, you know, the fans were waiting. It was just fantastic.
And that was Game 5 then in 06. We have Game 5 tomorrow. Sabres and Habs. Can't wait. Enjoy the day, folks.